Hello and welcome to the Africa Today podcast from the BBC at 15:30 GMT on Tuesday the 6th of June. I'm Sophie Ikenye. In the pod today, shock in Egypt as a gunman goes on a shooting spree, leaving six dead. The IAAF confirmed that South African athlete Caster Semenya can return to competition with immediate effect. And why Somaliland has become a new tourist hotspot for some American tourists.
It's very, very safe. A lot of American cities have a lot of violence. There seems to be no violence here at all.
You walk freely in Nargeza town?
Oh yeah, well, I walk freely late at night, early in the mornings, anytime. Yeah, it's no problem.
It came as a shock when a disgruntled employee of an Egyptian construction company opened fire on his colleagues today, killing six and wounding 16 others before surrendering. The gunman, who is a driver, pulled over the company bus in Western Cairo, whipped out an assault rifle and sprayed his passengers with bullets. Now, to find out more about the incident, I spoke to the BBC's Rania Sabri.
The details we have, just like you said, about the disgruntled employee or driver pulling aside and starting spraying bullets. And then the driver took the bus to the headquarters of the company, turned the corpses in, and he denied he did anything. 50-year-old Mahmoud Taha Ahmed Suwelem said that he was stopped by armed personnel on the way, and they are the people who did the shooting. He denied completely having anything to do with the killing, although people in the bus did confirm that he was the shooter.
And what has the company said about the incident?
Well, the company was shocked. It took them about 7 hours to issue a statement, and the statement was all about compensation rather than the incident. I spoke to the head of the company, Mr. Ibrahim Mehlib, and he said that he was shocked because the driver had been with them for about 30 years, and he was a very, very calm and steady person, one you wouldn't expect even to lose his temper, let alone do such an act.
How unusual is this kind of incident in Egypt?
Well, it is very, very unusual. I mean, of course, Cairo is a very, very busy city and it's very crowded. So you see people, you know, agitated or fighting in the traffic, in the congested traffic. But to go as far as shooting, it was a bit too far and very, very much unexpected, as people from Cairo told me.
This is such an unusual accident for a man to open fire on his colleagues and kill them. This is so unusual. What have we come to? There is no security in the country. If this is the first time, you might as well expect anything from now on. There might be a second and a third, and it's all because of the pressure we live under, which makes people lose their minds.
It is an accident that reflects the pressure Egyptian citizens are subject to, but we cannot generalize or consider it a phenomenon. We have to wait for the results of the investigation.
Egyptians on the streets of Cairo there. And Rania, what about the media? What are they saying?
For starters, the official media totally overlooked the incident. It wasn't out on the news bulletins or even the official news agencies. But for the e-news sites and for the electronic media, they started reminding people about columns and commentators who have been warning from such actions. They've been saying that Egyptians are under too much pressure. The life and the cost of living in Egypt is incrementally increasing, and people just can't make ends meet. And a lot of sociologists have warned in columns and commentaries that people might start to flip, and maybe this was the first one to flip, this driver this morning, and more are yet to come. That's according to the electronic media and Twitter.
That was the BBC's Rania Sabri speaking to me from Cairo. The South African athlete Caster Semenya has had a bit of good news today. The 800 metres world champion was forced to cool her heels after she was suspended from competition when questions emerged over her gender last year. The International Association of Athletics Federations requested gender tests after she'd won gold at the World Championships in Berlin last August. The local body, Athletics South Africa, then banned her from competing until the tests were confirmed. Now, the case roused much discussion in South Africa, with political heavyweights throwing around accusations of racism. Earlier, I spoke to our correspondent in South Africa, Nomsa Maseko.
Well, the IAAF has released a three-line statement basically saying that gender verification tests have been completed and that the IAAF accepts the conclusion of the medical experts who did do these tests. And they also say that they will make no further comment on the matter. And they're basically saying that the medical details of what was actually the matter with Caster Semenya still remains unknown at this stage.
So she's free to compete as a woman now?
They're basically saying that she is free to compete as a woman with immediate effect.
But have they released the results of the tests?
No, they haven't. They're basically saying that the medical details of the case remain confidential. They do not want to talk about it. We've tried to actually give them a call. They say that no further comment on the matter. It is now closed.
What's been the reaction from Ms. Semenya herself?
We have been battling, in fact, to get a hold of her, but we have seen some reports where her father basically says that her daughter is quite happy with the results that have come about from the IAAF and that she's preparing to be competing in the next athletics competition.
Which is when exactly? Do we know?
Well, they're basically saying that Semenya is poised to make her return to the tracks as early as the World Junior Championships on July the 19th and October's Commonwealth Games in Delhi. So it could be sooner than we thought.
So obviously this case generated a lot of discussion, and the political heavyweights who've lambasted the media and the IAAF for the whole thing, have they said anything in response to this latest development?
Well, it's actually been the ANC Youth League that basically says that it welcomes and celebrates the clearing of South Africa's golden girl. And they're also saying that the Athletics South Africa president, who was fired after this, should be reinstated in his position, because all he did after this controversy broke out is that he tried to protect Caster Semenya. And also, you'd recall that the sports minister, Makhenkesi Stofile, said he would declare World War III if Semenya was banned from competing. And we also have been trying to get hold of the ministry and Athletics South Africa, but none of them have been available for comment.
The BBC's Nomsa Maseko speaking to me from South Africa. In Kenya, 120 youths suspected to be members of the outlawed sect Mungiki today appeared in a Nairobi court accused of extorting money from public service vehicle operators. In the past, members of the Mungiki sect have been known to kill, torture and destroy the property of people who refused to pay special taxes to their agents, normally strategically stationed at public service vehicle stages. From Nairobi, Muliro Telewa reports.
120 young men, mainly in their 20s, today appeared in a Nairobi city court and denied being members of the infamous Mungiki sect. They also denied extorting money from public service vehicles, known locally as matatus. Some have been released on bond, while others have been remanded until next month, when the cases they are facing are supposed to be heard and determined. The emergence of the Mungiki sect has sent shockwaves among public service vehicle operators in the country. Mungiki followers decapitated crew members of the public service vehicles who refused to give out daily amounts of $2 per day to their organization. They also burnt the vehicles. Public service owners and their crews refused to speak to us, saying they would be risking their lives if they did so. The sect, which has been in existence for more than two decades, started as a traditional religious group which forced their women members to undergo female genital mutilation, but transformed into political militias during general elections to serve certain political groups. During the 20-year period, the group, which mainly operates in informal settlements, has been known to collect taxes from people depending on the type of houses they have, the amount of harvest they get, and even the amount of milk they got daily from their animals. Last year, the government arrested leaders of the Mungiki sect and charged them with various criminal offenses, but later on released them and withdrew the cases after they disowned the sect and were baptized into Christianity. The former chairman of the group, Maina Njenga, has in recent weeks been conducting campaigns in support of the proposed new constitution.
The BBC's Muliro Telewa reporting from Nairobi. Social networking sites have mass appeal and have been used by advertisers, politicians, organizations and celebrities to communicate with the public. Now, Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan has also joined in and has been using his new Facebook account to interact with Nigerians. President Jonathan even said that some of his recent decisions have been influenced by comments on his page. From Lagos, the BBC's Tomi Oladipo has more.
About 2 months ago, President Goodluck Jonathan was speaking at a graduation ceremony when he mentioned that he would soon open a Facebook account. He said this would help him connect better with Nigerians. Fast forward to now, and the page has been active for 9 days, with the president posting a message every morning. In one status update, President Jonathan said he wants Nigerians to be stakeholders rather than onlookers in this administration. Thousands of Nigerians have been visiting the page every day, sending all sorts of messages to the president. Someone mentioned a case of the need for a Nigerian consulate in California in the US, and the president responded to that. A number of people mentioned the poor supply of electricity in the country, and the president also responded, saying he's working on that. President Goodluck Jonathan even noted that some of the views expressed on this page influenced his decision to turn around the suspension of the national football team yesterday. But not just that, he even passed on some of these views to officials of the Nigerian Football Federation. A few of those posting on President Jonathan's page have expressed their doubts about him and his use of the site. But he's also made time for them, asking the cynics to have a change of heart and to think positively. As the page becomes even more popular, it's not clear how President Goodluck Jonathan will be able to go through the countless posts about countless issues. But he seems aware that for many years Nigerians have felt that their leaders have not been listening to them, not to mention responding to their needs. In this case, though, what will matter to the public is what action the president takes after he reads these posts.
The BBC's Tomi Oladipo reporting from Lagos. Somalia's breakaway Republic of Somaliland has just elected its new president. During the election, the government closed the country's borders amid fears that Islamists from neighboring Somalia might try to disrupt the elections. The country is yet to get international recognition, but that hasn't stopped tourists from exploring it. Our reporter Bashkash Juksadeh was in Hargeisa. He caught up with some American visitors in town.
Connor Gordon, America. It's very, very safe. A lot of American cities have a lot of violence. There seems to be no violence here at all.
You walk freely in Hargeisa town?
Oh, yeah. Well, I walk freely late at night, early in the mornings, anytime. Yeah, it's no problem.
And you, sir, can you give me your names?
My name is Ladin Juracek. Well, I come from Salt Lake City, which is a very nice, peaceful town as well. And this.
How do you find the peaceful atmosphere that is existing in Hargeisa? Compared places, a place like southern Somalia?
Well, southern Somalia, I don't think it even compares. But it's actually even better than a place like Ethiopia. I feel much more comfortable here. I mean, I spent 5 weeks in Ethiopia, and already 5 days in Somaliland, I would rather spend more time here. I'd rather spend 5 weeks here. Yeah, I get hassled less, even for being white and everything like that.
When you are coming to Hargeisa, your relative, maybe your parents, what do you tell them? Where were you going, actually?
I didn't tell them anything. I told them when I got here that, hey, I'm in Somaliland, which is part of Somalia. And now my mom has withdrawn support from me. And so I might have a lot of trouble when I come home. So I don't know. I'll see, inshallah. But it might cause problems. The reason we came here was because we have a Lonely Planet guidebook. And it said that, like, oh, Somaliland is peaceful. So we look into it a little bit more. And it was quite peaceful. It has 8 pages out of a 700-page book, so there's almost nothing written about it. But that's the reason we came here. And
what actually interested you to come here to Hargeisa?
Because it's unrecognized, it's safe, and it's Somalia, but it's safe. You can go to it and visit, and I can see Somali people, and I could tell folks that I've been to Somalia and loved it.
Have they asked you about the pirates?
Yeah, the pirates. We were originally going to take a ferry from Berbera to Aden, Yemen. Everyone's like, pirates, you're going to die. But yeah, it's been wonderful so far. But
when you spoke to your people back home in America and you told them that you are in Somaliland, particularly in Hargeisa town, how did they take that? Did they think of maybe sending you a special rescue mission or something like that?
First they go, Somalia? And then it's like, no, it's okay. It's great. I loved it. And they're like, okay. just be careful. But yeah, I will encourage many people to come here.
American tourists in Somaliland, Connor Gordon and Laden Jocek, speaking to our reporter Bashkash Jigsudale. And that's it for today. Thank you for downloading the Africa Today podcast from the BBC, recorded weekdays at 15:30 GMT. You can also listen to our programs and access more multimedia content on our website at bbcworldservice.com/Africa. I'm Sophie Ikenye. Until next time, goodbye.